Survivor Specialists John and McKenna are back, as always, with Kyle to talk about some first jurors and their impacts on their seasons. This is Bitter or Better, and we've got another crop of five for you. We thought we were out of the dark ages, which I guess we are, because some of these seasons are great, but man, I don't have a lot to say about some of these first jurors because I don't think they impacted much.
I think we're entering an era where the game of Survivor is really shifting. And it doesn't fully shift until after this section of five, but this is where we really see the transition into like the big moves era. And because of that, I think we start seeing our first jurors get a little more under-edited. Unless they're like really pivotal to the storyline. And I think out of all of these five seasons we're covering today, that only really happens once.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just taking a look at these jurors before we came on. And out of the five, Sarah has more confessionals in her boot episode than the other four do combined in theirs. And like you said, they just start to become more under-edited. I think that the narrative starts to shift. Like, we start to see a lot more kind of obvious winner edits here. In my opinion, the winners become obvious. I think in the game, we see more landslide votes at the end. Yeah. You know, we're entering like the Twitter age, the social media age. So the game is starting to become a little bit more meta. And you can see that kind of reflected here a little bit.
I think that's the real big thing, because if we look at these vote splits for these seasons, right, it's a perfect game. We have 7-1-0, a 8-1, a 5-2-1, but I'm throwing an asterisk up on that one that we'll get to when we get to San Juan del Sur. And then a 6-1-1 that we get in Worlds Apart, right? Like, these are landslides. So I think we see less of an influence of that first juror in these seasons because things were a little more unanimous than they had been in previous seasons.
Yeah, so let's dive right into it. We are talking Michael Snow as our first juror, which I'm glad we get to talk and give Michael Snow a little bit more love than Survivor gave him, because I did like him. I liked him and Matt together on Karamoan, and I was rooting for him, but then Corinne kind of got a hold of him and I wasn't liking him as much just because she kind of got a hold of him. But I think he's one of the most game savvy fans that were on that tribe and really did want to play the game. And while he doesn't do much that we see, I feel like he did have a decent amount of control over with the fans, but then once the swap happened, he swapped out Numbered and it just crumbled from there. He was able to hang on until the merge, but his allies kept going one by one by one as those next votes came out.
Yeah, Snowy, I think that this is where Bland really comes in. Like, if there ever was one, which is unfortunate because I do think that he is a great player and I wish that we got to see a lot more of him, but the game didn't shake out that way. He's not even really taken out because he is, like, they see him as a good player, like I'm sure they did, but he's really taken out here as like the safe vote. He's like the fourth option out of this group. And he's taken out because of, you know, the Three Amigos. And, of course, what we see in the next Tribal Council, they had good reason to be afraid of the Three Amigos. But Michael, he just kind of goes out in like a bit of a whimper, right? He has no confessionals in his boot episode. He has no real storyline going on. So it's hard to gauge what impact he had here, what influence he had on the jury.
The awkward thing about Michael's positioning in Karamoan is that he's not in the main alliance of like South Aras that's really running everything from the returnee side. And he isn't really in the main alliance of the opposition to South Aras either in the Three Amigos. And because of that, he's kind of left in no man's land in this narrative space that doesn't really position him to say anything or contribute anything to the season. And because of that, there's not really a point of like forcing his opinion on things, despite the fact that he is game savvy, despite the fact that he does understand what's going on in the game, because it just doesn't feel imperative to the narrative that they're trying to sell this season, which is really to just like show up Cochran and what Cochran is doing in his perfect game.
Now, this would make him not the first juror, but I feel like we would see his impact on the game more come Final Tribal Council if Corinne was the first juror, because he is clearly the only one able to speak her language this season and is able to maybe calm her down once he would arrive at Ponderosa. So he doesn't really have much of an impact on the jury because he is the first juror, I feel. And like what you were saying before, John, it's mainly because Andrea freaks out that she is going to be the vote of Malcolm, Eddie, and Renald, that she needs to change the target just in case there's an idol, because she doesn't want to go home. So that's how Michael got landed on, because he is the one that is definitely not having an idol, and they're not going to play it on him either. He's just kind of there voting with them.
I think that you really hit the nail on the head, John, when you said no man's land. Like, I think from here on out, we see a lot of the first jurors and early merge boots being in that no man's land where they're just kind of the safe option, or they have no real allies, rather than being like a big character, a big player, the head of some kind of alliance. So we see like from here on out, the first juror is the merge boot. It's not in this season, but from here on out. So
mostly because of what happens in this season, but
very true.
Aside from 35, but it's fine.
Yeah. I guess the new era. Just forget what I said. But yeah, it's a lot smaller characters, smaller players, at least in terms of the edit. And so, like we've been saying, the impact is a little bit harder to judge with the jurors from here on out.
Is there a strategic merit to that, though? Like, is there a reason why these people end up being the first juror? Because if you look at this, especially a season like Caramoan, right, where someone who is very strongly opinionated as Corinne is voted out as the last pre-juror. And then you have a point where, okay, we're going to put Michael as the first juror because he isn't going to have that much influence on everything, but still has a personality that could probably be a very like calming and soothing and welcoming personality for anyone coming from the jury or coming to the jury. Mm-hmm. And therefore, like, it kind of gets rid of any of this like hot-headedness that could be happening.
Yeah, that is a possibility and something to think about. I think a lot of players don't necessarily think who should be the first juror, and they often think who should not be the first juror. And we had a bunch of that discussion in 48 of like, who do we want or not want on the jury? And I think ultimately Michael is a basic first juror. Or better, I guess, if we're sticking to the two, because he doesn't do anything bad, but he doesn't really add anything. His question in Final Tribal Council, he asks both Dawn and Cochran questions, and to Dawn, he says, why are you perceived as more of the villain, and why is Cochran getting off scot-free? And then Cochran, is all the reactions to Dawn warranted? And it doesn't necessarily set up Cochran. It just does in the way both of them answer the question. It honestly is trying to give Dawn some credit here of like, hey, you kind of are getting crapped on here, and Cochran's getting like nothing. Why? And I want, because maybe you don't deserve what everybody has been giving you. And then Cochran, do you also think she should not be getting all of this hate? And he's like, well, if she is, I'm glad. So it kind of just sets Cochran up for another vote from Michael, just based on their responses. But inherently, I think he has a pretty even keeled question.
This question kind of hits a topic that became very popular during this time in Survivor, in this era of Survivor, which is the idea of what are the preconceived notions people have about gender roles in Survivor? Because I think that's really what Michael's getting at here is Dawn is supposed to be coming in as this motherly character, supposed to be like very nurturing, and plays a fairly cutthroat game this season, right? Is given the agency to do so because of her partnership with Cochrane throughout it and everything. But especially like with the final six in Caramoan, that seemed like a very ruthless move for someone who is supposed to be the motherly figure in the season. And I think we see that a lot during this era. We get it in Cagayan, right, where Cass is talking to her husband about if I was a man and people were talking about the moves I was doing, I'd be a badass. But because of I'm a woman, I'm a bitch, right? So I think this is a very pertinent to this entire era of Survivor. And Michael really does kind of set the tone here. The problem is he's such a minor character in this season that no one even had that conversation about it afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look at some of the losing finalists in this block that we're talking about here. Dawn, Monica Culpepper, Missy, Mama C. So you have Cass, four, yeah. And then Cass.
Oh, Cass doesn't make
it to the final chapter of the council, but yes.
Like, but yeah, but and then the rest of them are losing finalists, and it's like four women, I don't know, 45 years old at least, you know. Mm-hmm. So it is a big point of conversation in this era. So I love this question from Michael, because Dawn really does deserve more credit personally, I think, than she gets. And it's propping somebody up without bringing somebody else down, right? Like, he's still voting for Cochrane, but his question is setting Dawn up, and it makes Dawn feel good, right? So like, I think that is that's the best kind of juror that you can possibly be.
Yeah, yep. Agreed.
I think one interesting thing to consider when it comes to Caramoan, because this is our second fans for his favorite season, so we've already kind of discussed the impact of our first juror on that. So in Micronesia, we talked about how Eliza being that first juror was really important for the returnees to kind of like set the tone that a returnee should end up winning the season. Is there any merit in sending one of the fans as the first juror this time instead of a returnee?
It's really hard to judge on Caramoan because nobody's a fan, really. But I guess depending on who they're fans of, like if Michael Snow comes out as the biggest Cochrane fan and Cochrane doesn't have his name written all over his boot, it's just a generic Stealth RS vote. That's a great person to have on the jury. I think in a fans versus favorite season, it's either which favorite might set me up to win, or which fan is like my biggest cheerleader that I don't need with me. All right, let's go into Blood versus Water, one of my favorite seasons, but Aris is not one of my favorite winners. Tune in in just a few short hours to when maybe Aris might appear on this next section of winners. So Aris and Vetus come back together here at the merge, and it's pretty much them stuck together like glue. They think that they're running everything. And a lot of what we get in this episode is actually narrated by Vetus. Vetus talks about them a lot and how, you know, everybody loves them. They're going to be good. They'd win against anybody if they were in the final three. And, you know, we got to get out Laura M or Sierra and we're golden. So they're pretty much just like feel on top of the world, as the women made Vetus feel that way and Tyson made Aris feel that way.
Yeah, this is it's an interesting situation because we have the first Blood versus Water season. So when you're voting one person out, you're really pissing two people off, right? So you have those implications were never really thought of before. And what I was thinking about earlier was that this season is sort of like a version of the Redemption Island Final Three, where it's like, Tyson, stay with me here. Tyson is like a dominant winner. I think that we would agree. And he's kind of the front runner the whole time. But I think Tyson only wins next to the two specific people he's sitting next to. Like, Tina would win. Yeah. Sierra would win. Hayden would win. So you have a jury who is, like, game savvy enough, right? Obviously, Aris, winner, Sierra, big moves. But they're not, like, thrilled about who they're voting for, right? Mm-hmm. Tyson wins unanimously, but this is not a jury that's, like, pro-Tyson. So it was kind of an anti...
Well, it's not unanimous. Like, give Monica her flowers. She didn't get one vote.
I say almost unanimous. So it's sort of like an anti that trio. They were mad at that trio of the Tyson, Monica, Jervis. And Tyson was just, he just played the best game, I think, out of the three. They thought so. But it's not like a pro Tyson tone that we're setting here, right? It's like, we're mad at all three of you, and you just played the best game.
Yeah, I think what this really came down to in the end, and why I think Aris is really the important person to be here as this first juror, and why it really does dictate that Tyson's the one who comes out here. Tyson specifically worked on his relationship with Aris to this point, to get it to the point that Aris was the first juror who then would respect his game the most and advocate for him the most. I think, okay, is he like completely the best possible first juror? Maybe not. But Tyson still knew and was working towards this position the entire game. And I think that's something that's not really credited. He was working with Aris a lot during the pre-merge, but as soon as they merged, he knew exactly who had to be out of the game in order for his game to succeed. And in doing so, he puts someone on the game who kind of fills a similar archetype role as himself in this season. And he's at least made these social bonds in a way where you see how Jervis is being more abrasive towards Aris in this season. And we get the bias of the older woman again when it comes to Monica. So I think really what this does is this sets up Tyson's win significantly by putting Aris out in this position, because he is someone who would actually advocate and be like, yo, guys, clearly Tyson's the one running the show and these other two are just following along.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And this first juror and another one also, you know, they in this group of seasons lost by being, they were the last one out of the challenge of the memory blocks or the memory challenge. So we also have Josh doing the same thing where it's like they were also one challenge win away from not being the first juror. And I was like, that I remembered it for Blood versus Water, but I forgot it for San Juan del Sur. And if Aris does win that challenge, I still think we see Vetus go, because the brothers there are too powerful together. And I just don't know if they are similar minded, but Aris being the returning player, I think it has that Eliza effect on the jury, where I don't think Vetus does the same thing. He might pull for a Jervis or a Monica or something, you know, if he was the first juror, because he spent a lot of time with Monica and he had Monica and Tina being like, you know, you could marry my daughter. Like it's crazy. So I think Aris being the one to go here sets up Tyson, where if Vetus goes, it might give Monica a little bit more edge at Final Tribal Council.
Vetus is the only person who votes for Monica.
Yeah.
So that is important to take into consideration. Like, I actually do think it's so important that Aris goes here first. And I think why it's important, we've talked about it before, where the jury wants to see themselves in the winner, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that really hits here with Aris and Tyson. I think Aris sees Tyson playing the game that Aris wanted to play.
Yeah. Here's something else to consider, is that this is a Redemption Island season. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know for sure that the merge boot is going to be the first juror. It happened to work out that way. But in the other two Redemption Island seasons, that was like a side versus side, black and white thing. So it's like whoever comes back into the game, like our side, we already have the numbers, we'll just vote them out again. Here, the dynamics were a little bit more fluid. It's a Blood versus Water season. So it's like I may have to see this person again, right? Whoever I put on the jury first, they might come back. So it's a different dynamic to consider. Because you don't know for sure. I want to put this person on as the first juror, but they may not necessarily be the first
wind up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His final tribal council speech, he starts off with Jervis saying, "Prove to me that you know game awareness. Why should I vote for Tyson or Monica? Pick one of them." Then Monica, who made the best move between the boys? And then Tyson does the same thing. And both of them, both Jervis and Monica, pick Tyson. And then Tyson picks Monica. And I feel like this question is set up to boost someone. So I think two people are going to pick one person, and that last person has to go somewhere else. So it's kind of setting up both of the people who are looked at as not the best in this tribal council to just give the winner more of a win than... I don't know. This question just doesn't seem as fair as, like, Michael's question.
This is a trap question.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You have to answer, like, each other, and Aris is, like, giving the trap. The other two ensnare themselves, and then Tyson's just like, Monica.
Yeah. The reason why this is a trap is because you, as a final tribal counselor, for sure, you as someone, as a finalist, is that's the word I'm looking for.
I don't try to counselor.
Guys, I'm on a lot of pain meds right now, okay? Words are hard. A finalist wants to both answer honestly and how they think the jury wants them to answer. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, it becomes very obvious that Aris believes the answer is Tyson. And I think it comes across that, like, both Jervis and Monica also believe that. So they're not strategically thinking this through of, like, if both of them say Tyson, that's not going to look good on either of them.
Yeah.
But also, if Monica says Jervis, probably not looking good on her either, because it does show a lack of game awareness, right?
Right.
Yeah. There's no question to this.
There isn't. This is a question that really sets up people for failure more than it does success.
Mm-hmm. So then that begs the question, is this bitter or better?
Bitter. I think Aris is a bitter juror. He is shocked that he got voted out. The first time he played, he didn't get voted out. So he was, you know, blindsided with this vote. And I think even though he votes for someone who, you know, blindsided him and who he trusted, he was like, Tyson is with us 100%. I still think this question is bitter toward just the jury and ensnaring other final tribal councilists.
Yeah, I
agree. He's he wasn't thrilled to vote for any of these three. but yeah, he just had that respect more so for Tyson. And I've watched that rock draw tribal council like 20 times from this season, and like you can see the jury's reactions throughout the season, and they're like laughing, they're making faces, like they're clearly fed up with that trio that made the final three. But you gotta vote for someone.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Sarah Lucina, and I think this will be our biggest segment by far. because this episode is the Sarah Lucina show. She has so much bravado throughout the entire episode because she is that linchpin in two different plans. There's the Apari six from the Swap Tribe, and then she has all her old Brawn members on the other tribe, and they're trying to pull her in to make them a six because it's a 5-6 split coming into the merge. And so she is like, I'm in the middle, I'm doing the middle dance, and nobody's gonna catch me because they all need my vote. And in comes Chaos Cass to usurp her decision once she's made it. and make her own decision. And because Sarah is playing this middle ground with everybody and not giving anybody concrete answers, that's when the vote flips on her from the other side and is just like, you know what? We can get Cass to do Sarah, no problem, because they've had a riff. And so that's why Sarah goes in this position. If she had just stuck to one or the other, even if she flipped, if she just stuck to one of them, she wouldn't be the first juror of the season.
Mm-hmm. Now, this might really be the best Survivor episode of all time. Like, this is it got me hooked on Survivor, I can tell you that. So this is yeah, by far the most like tone setting, the most that we get from a first juror, not just in this episode, but Sarah was a very prevalent character throughout the pre-merge as well, a very important player on the Braun tribe. And this is a huge instance of someone voting for someone because they wanted to play the game. Mm-hmm. That person, like Sarah, clearly wanted to play the Tony game, and she then, you know, kind of successfully does that later in Game Changers. So this is, and again, not thrilled to be voting for who she's voting for. Like, we know that her and Tony definitely had like a rough patch after this season for a little while, but yeah, this episode is just chaos. Like,
literally has a quote. I will decide. I'm the president right now.
Sarah Lucina. This is actually a really important thing, I think, and I think the control that Sarah has is really important. Because of the way that Kageyan unfolds, right? Like, Tony again wins 8-1. The only vote he doesn't get is Tasha's. Sarah does have some control in this, but also if you look at what her question, like what her statement is essentially at Final Tribal Council, the idea that Tony said that sworn his badge that he would never vote for her, when she was
planning on voting
against him anyways.
When I rewatched that, I was kind of confused at her statement to him too.
But it's because double standards are just a thing in Survivor. We see it all the time. And
she didn't actually do it. That's why she can say it.
Yeah, exactly. But I think when you look at Sarah here, and she comes into this position being completely blindsided in a situation where she thinks they're getting one over on them and have just forced two idols out of the game, right? Yeah. She is in a spot where she thinks everything is going her way and she is just going to run this game. She doesn't even realize how poor of a social game she has had in this position that has pissed Cass off to the point where Trish is easily able to be like, hey, Cass, who do you want to vote for? And Sarah is the only name coming out of her mouth. And because of that, and because of the Apari of it all, it really makes this interesting because of that deal the Aparis had going into this merge. The idea that, okay, if anyone flips on the six, like, we won't vote for them at the end. Obviously, they're not given that opportunity because Wu takes Tony to the end. But that really does kind of sit there and make everyone bitter for a long, long time on this jury. This idea that, hey, they see Cass make it almost to the end of the game, and they're just sitting there stewing in their anger for this move that got Sarah out of the game.
And Sarah is also offended that Cass is just Cass is voicing her opinion of like, hey, I'm worried that you might flip because of the bronze on the other side. Well, would I say that to Sarah? Probably not, because she goes off the handle about that. And then, but Cass makes a good point of like, you haven't really been tested to actually be aligned with us, because you're aligned with us because you have to be aligned with us right now. So this is why I'm worried about this situation, because all of your old tribe mates are over there. And because Sarah is trying to play both sides, dictate the vote, because it has to be a big player this round. It can't just be Trish or Jeffra. She's the one going home. If she played the middle the entire time and then just let Trish or Jeffra go home, I think Cass doesn't flip. But it's because she's forcing the vote on top of not being solid that they flip, that the other side flips the vote to Sarah. And we get her kind of stewing here.
One thing I love about summer is how easy everything feels. The days are a little more relaxed, and I find myself reaching for the same comfortable go-anywhere pieces again and again. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on well-made essentials that naturally become those everyday staples you actually live in all season long.
Quince's 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and a summer upgrade your rotation needs, starting at just $34. And Phil, I told you this before, but I don't often wear linen shirts or linen pants. But now that I have them from Quince, I find myself going back to them time and time again, whether it's an upscale outdoor event or if I'm just hanging by the beach or at the pool, I'm reaching for these shirts all throughout the summer. Also, their tees are soft enough to live in all day, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you want when summer nights cool down. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a trusted favorite for everything from home to travel to everyday essentials.
Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/specialist for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/specialist with an S at the end for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/specialists. Your paycheck date could soon become the most irrelevant number in your life. Earnin is a non-bank finance app, 5 million people and growing. The concept is almost annoyingly simple. You earn money, you access it. Up to $150 per day of what you've already worked for, up to $1,000 between paychecks. Tips are optional and standard transfers take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers start at $3.99 and cap at $5.99. It's not about emergencies. It's just a better way to exist financially day to day. Worth checking out. Look, you all know I wear a lot of hats, and nothing annoys me more than waiting for money that I earned while due dates inch closer and closer. I did the work, so what's taking so long? We live in an era of instant gratification, so why don't we demand instant access to our money? The most essential thing we need to participate in society is the thing we wait for the most. That's absurd. End the absurdity today. Download Earnin on the App Store or Google Play, spelled like earning money without the G. Type in the specialist under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Access limits are based on your earnings and risk factors. Standard cash outs take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers available for a fee. Tips are voluntary and don't affect the service. Available in select states. Terms and restrictions apply. Visit earnin.com for full details.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing to blow a position like this, you know, like to be in this kind of spot. And she really, she plays the round like 99% well, right? She has 5 votes on her side, like 6 to 5 vote. She does get the 2 idols out of the game. Like they outplay that alliance, right? They get them all turned around. They get the, they flush the idols and they vote for Jeffra, which none of them saw coming. It was just this very large aspect here of the social game. and I forgot how much Sarah and Cass like really bickered leading up to this. So the setup was there. And Sarah, at this point, obviously was not as savvy of a player as she becomes later on. So she does not recognize that. But yeah, this is what a missed opportunity, because they really had that other alliance like dead to rights if Sarah was just a little bit cleaner.
I'm going to push back on this a little bit, Kyle. Sarah did not play this clean at all. If you don't remember, Sarah was pushing the fact that Tony or LJ had to go here. Like,
yeah,
everyone was saying, okay, we need to get rid
of big player. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, and Sarah was like, no, it has to be Tony. And that's why Cass gets alienated, because Sarah is so adamant it has to be the way she has. Yes, she eventually concedes and ends up voting Jeffra, but she pushes someone away by being so adamant that it had to be someone else.
This is true. I am impressed, I guess. That impressed is the wrong word. Surprised she didn't lose anybody else in this alliance here with that.
In her final words, she says, like, huh, thought we had a solid set of 6. I don't know why Cass flipped, but they got me good. And it's like, you don't You thought you had a solid six? How were you solid when you were also floating between two alliances? So that can't be solid just off the bat. And then you don't know why Cass flipped, which is insane to me, because Cass is not one to be shy about voicing her opinion. Mm-hmm. Sarah had a lot of learning to do from being this first juror. And I think honestly, being the first juror here helped moving forward because she knew kind of the ins and outs of what a jury was thinking by being the first one. And it honestly, it helps Tony an insane amount because it's, you know, it can't be two cops at the end, but one cop as the first member of the jury, hell, that sets me up great.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk this out. Do you think that she made the right choice by sticking with the Apari Six, or should she have flipped back to the other group to begin with?
I think she's screwed either way.
Yeah, I don't think she's in a really good spot here, no matter what.
It's not a great spot.
She's pissing off five people, no matter what she does.
Yeah. It's like majority brain or majority brawn that isn't with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing to consider here is Sarah plays around prior to this in the middle, right? Because in the Apari tribe, she's the only brawn member between three beauties and three brain.
Yeah. And then she's also in the middle between like Cliff and Tony, and Tony is pulling her away from Cliff. So
she plays the middle the entire game, and she's like not in a set alliance. And I think that's why this downfall happens, is because she isn't picking a side here. And she kind of lets it go to her head because she thinks she's playing so well in the middle because everything's gone her way so far. She's kind of essentially using confirmation bias to get to this point. And then when she gets to being on the jury, she knows the entire time. Again, there are a lot of people in the game who still didn't know Tony was a cop, right?
Yeah.
He told everyone on his swap tribe, but anyone on Apari didn't know until either Tony revealed it at some point or Sarah told them at Ponderosa. So she even has like this information to kind of prop up Tony's game without realizing she's propping up Tony's game by just saying that he's lying about being a construction worker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Sarah, bitter or better first juror?
It's really tough because Wu is very much a non-entity in this final tribal council and was never going to get Sarah's vote in the first place. I think Tony was always set to get Sarah's vote.
Yeah.
Here. The problem is we know she's bitter. It just happens to be this is a final two instead of a final three, so she can't be bitter towards the person she wants to be bitter towards.
Yeah, this is what I mean when I said that these votes are like these winners are obvious even within the game. Where it's like, if Tony gets to the end, like he's just winning. Like it's you're mad at him, but it's like he's winning, especially if he's against Wu, who's like you said, a non-entity. If he's again in the end against Spencer, it's a different conversation. But Tony still might win, but at least Spencer is an entity, right? Right. Wu is just never had a chance,
and. Her question to Wu is, Wu, would you vote for me if I played your game? And even though he answers it correctly of yes, I would, it still doesn't sound right. Like, it just doesn't feel like it's the right answer. And I think if he said, no, I wouldn't, it's also not the right answer. So we're talking about trap questions again, where it's like that one is kind of a trap question.
Yeah, I like it, though. I don't like it.
This is an instance where Wu could not possibly reflect the juror in his own game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, right? Like Sarah like you said, Sarah wanted to play Tony's game because Tony did, in fact, go on to play the middle after Sarah left the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He floats between both sides, conveniently using each side to get the numbers down so he's controlling every single vote. And because of that, you have Wu here who genuinely would vote for his game because he played the game that he wanted to play. It's just not the game that anyone on the jury respects. And that's the problem with Wu's game.
So better for Tony, but bitter overall.
Just better. Yeah. Bitter in general, yeah.
Bitter is good. Yeah.
All right, going on to San Juan del Sur, we have Josh as our first juror. He's one of the spearheads of one of the alliances. And then you have Jeremy as another spearhead of the opposing alliance. And then you have John and Jacqueline just floating around here in the middle. And you don't really see necessarily why Josh goes out. It's just, who are John and Jacqueline voting for, and where are the, who are they siding with? And it all comes down to the Jacqueline being at camp with the boys and John not being there, and the boys of Josh's alliance. Mm-hmm. And Josh is that kingpin of that alliance. And you know what? That's he's gone. So he's an interesting first juror to have. It's not quite as bad as Reed would have been, because we all know the ugly stepmother speech of his final tribal council, but it's still not the best.
Josh is weird because as a first juror, because he's a huge character on this season. He is a huge part of the pre-merge. But he has kind of a quieter boot episode.
Mm-hmm.
After a giant merge episode, 11 confessionals in that one. Mm-hmm. And it's like setting up the Josh versus Jeremy war. So it's like, once Jeremy wins immunity, like I wonder if there was any chance that John and Jacqueline would have voted Jeremy out here. If he didn't win immunity, and Josh, with being such a big presence in this season, I feel like he doesn't have a super big impact on this season. I think a lot of like the gameplay and the narrative start after he's gone, like with Natalie's arc and all that.
It depends, really, because the season is kind of, I find San Juan del Sur is very much like a tale of two seasons. Mm-hmm. Where you have this like Jeremy versus Josh aspect in the pre-merge that we're all leading towards. And then because Jeremy and Josh go home back to back when we get to the merge, all of a sudden then it's like, okay, here's Natalie's storyline that's built off of one of those two people. True. And because of that, it really does, I think it really highlights Natalie here, because I said we would talk about it when we got here, right? Like, yes, this is a 5-2-1. However, you have to put in a couple of things into consideration here.
Loved ones.
First being, there are loved ones on the jury, so they're going to vote for their loved ones. So it was always going to be a 6-1-1 at the very least. And the only reason that Natalie doesn't get Reed's vote is because Reed doesn't want Missy to get second place money. Right? So when you take that into consideration, again, this is a hard one to evaluate because it is another landslide victory. And what is Josh going to say? Natalie essentially is the one who pulled one over on him, and like the proxy for Jeremy in this situation, right? We talked about the finalists being like reflections of the juror that they're talking to. But in this case, because Josh was so game savvy and is such a big Survivor fan, because of that, he really does respect game moves. And Natalie, because she's the one who makes it to the end and was the one who was closestly aligned with Jeremy, that wasn't even a word, is the closest ally of Jeremy there at the end, she kind of fits as a proxy for the person who beat Josh. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really important here. Is he sitting there advocating for Natalie? Quite frankly, you don't really need to advocate for Natalie in this position, right? Like, she did all these flashy things at Tribal Council to really set up her position to win the game. But he is the type of person who respects that, and I think that is really important in this jury, because if you got someone who is a little more bitter in that position, there's no way they are stumping for Natalie at the end of the game.
And that leads into his final tribal council question, where Jacqueline, is the reason that you're here due to yourself or stronger players getting you here, and can you give me one move that was solely your move? And because he wants to see these big flashy moves, and Natalie was giving it to him at tribal council. And I mean, she is correct in the Josh Boot being a big move for her that she advocated for, but because she was linked to John and everybody thinking John is doing all the things when really John was not doing all the things, it was all the females around John that was doing all the things, that she is perceived as not doing much. And so that idea of gameplay really benefits Natalie's style in having Josh as that for sure. Now, does she know what he's looking for? No. But while, you know, watching Final Tribal Council, it's clear that Josh is looking for those bang, wow, pop moments.
Yeah. Another thing that jurors don't really respect is wishy-washiness or like the perceived, because I think a lot of these people perceived Jacqueline as being wishy-washy. And I'm sure because she was in the middle a lot, in the middle of Jeremy.
They were forced there. They were put in the middle.
They were. They were. They did not ask for it. But I think a lot of people saw it that way, where it's like, oh, we think like, oh, you voted me out, then you voted Jeremy out, and it's like, oh, I guess I'll vote Jeremy out. You know, they're in the middle at like the Reed vote, even though that's unanimous. Like there was a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I guess we'll vote Reed out. Oh, we're kind of having a spat between us. So I think the jury didn't really like respect the way John and Jacqueline moved throughout the game. And Jacqueline, since she's in the end, here's a negative proxy where people didn't really respect John as a player. And since Jacqueline is with John, she takes the brunt of that. And then Missy, again, the older woman tax that we have here. I think Missy is a pretty underrated player, but she was never going to get the – I see that face. I think that she's a pretty underrated player. But I think the jury wants to see some, like, forward-thinkingness, some intentionality where it's like if you're going to flip, like, be concrete with it. Right. Like Tony had his moves like set up. Right. He is a strategic thinker. But I think like Jacqueline and John sometimes didn't come off as like, oh, this is I'm going for John. Then I'm going for Jeremy. Then I'm going for Reed. Like, I don't think that they got that vibe from that duo since that like Josh, Reed, West, they're all on the jury. They didn't really respect their gameplay.
Yeah.
Small side quest here. In this season, I wonder if it hurt Missy and Jacqueline that the jurors got to hang out with John and Baylor. If their votes were impacted, being like, man, you know, John is really annoying me right now. So Jacqueline, hell, you ain't getting my vote because I know whose pocket that's going into.
I think it's more that Natalie benefits from Nadia going home in the pre-merge than it is that they are, it's detrimental that they have loved ones on the jury, because I think what it comes down to is that allowed Natalie to play a game that no one else really could in the post-merge, because everyone was essentially there. Like, with the exception of Alec and Jeremy, everyone went in with a loved one at this merge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Tyson also wins without his loved one on the jury. All three of the finalists.
Yeah, that's why it didn't really like come up. That's why I asked that here.
But. Yeah, but here, no, it's a good point. It's like people are sick of John, so it's like I'm not voting for you. Of course, you're gonna say Jacqueline played a great game, but we don't believe you, right? Baylor, why are we gonna listen to you, right? And Natalie and Nadia, remember they came into this season with a pretty negative reputation. They're good characters, but they were annoying, let's just put it bluntly, on The Amazing Race, or at least they were perceived that way. So I think if they were together, that would make a huge difference if Nadia was on the jury.
I agree.
All right, so Josh, bitter or better?
Better. I would say better. His partner, definitely bitter, but he was better in the situation.
All right. moving quickly on to Worlds Apart, and we'll be done in about 5 minutes. We have Haley Ford. Here, the Haley just goes out. I don't really have much to say about Haley.
Yeah.
But basically, the three no callers are kind of one side of things, and then you got like Rodney on the other side of things with Mike, and Haley was looked at as smart. I don't know what they happened, how they happened to go for Haley, but it was just she leaves.
Yeah, this is there's another no man's land situation, right? The no man's land during the Revolutionary War on Tribe America. Like, I mean, Joe had immunity, so that really narrows down the options. Will had kind of flipped. And then Jen, yeah, between Haley and Jen, like, it's hard to say why exactly Haley goes here. And it's hard to say what impact she has. And this won't be the last time we talk about Haley as the first juror.
No, and we won't say much more else on that podcast.
So, yeah, I mean, she just kind of goes. And this season is dominated with huge personalities. Mm-hmm. Like this is a volatile cast of big personalities. So Haley gets lost in the shuffle. She gets one confessional here. And to me, this is very similar to like this Michael Snow situation where she's really just like a fourth, third option to go home here.
Yeah, she's the safe option here. And again, this is the time where we do start seeing the safe options go in this first juror spot. Remind me, is this the one?
Right after Jen plays her idol to get Kelly out. So Kelly's, so now Jen is looked at as a little bit of a threat and a possibility to find idols. Then Joe, in this episode, has the clue to the idol, but doesn't. And Mike says, oh, Joe's got the idol. So he's looked at to have the idol. And so Haley is just that other leg of the tripod.
Yeah, this is also the tribal council where Haley mentions the Murica of it all, right?
Yes. Okay, yeah. That is the one of three things now that is iconic about Haley Ford. I didn't remember that line at all. And she now only has three things to her name in two seasons.
What are the other two?
Metamorphosis and I Do Not Consent.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's it. It's not game moves. It's just some shit she says.
I think what I'm trying to get at this. What I'm trying to get at this show is like this is what how Haley approaches the game, right? Haley, I think, might be one of the like most recent social experiment players.
That's a funny way to say it, but I want to hear more.
I just think like she kind of feels like she's in like this Gabriel Cade type of archetype, right? Where it's like this isn't someone who's out here like, yes, she has a bit more of a strategic mind for the game and understands it's a game, but it feels like she's really like leading into this idea of like what Murica stands for and like the hard working of it all and everything. I think that is why ultimately she ends up voting for Mike at the end of this too, right? It just seems like she's looking for the embodiment. Again, this is a season where they named their merge tribe Murica. Guys, like it that really is indicative of how this season's viewed, right? And it is because despite the fact that we have no colors and white colors, this is a very blue collar season.
Yeah.
And I think like it's really kind of lost in the sauce of it that yes, Daryl Seymour, Haley was a total game changer this season.
She tried.
But I think this is really indicative of how this final tribal council was. And I do think she is kind of important with Mike getting the win here, because I think these no callers going at the beginning of this really did set it up, especially because you have representation from each of the tribes at the final tribal council, right? And we all know these no callers didn't like Will.
Yeah.
So I think it is actually very much like this is Haley being this first juror does actually push things a bit in Mike's way, despite the fact that Mike pisses everyone off after she leaves.
Yeah. And this, here's another good comment. Mike knew that he had all the no caller votes. This is another one where like the vote is obvious in real time. If Mike gets to the end, he's winning. But what's interesting is that Mike kind of leads the charge in the early merge here. Like he is the one who puts the vote on to Jen, and he is like the leader of this alliance. So he's putting them on the jury, but then is spinning it and getting their votes because he's like the underdog. He's close with Jen right before she goes home. They're also tight with Shireen. The no callers are, and Mike was Shireen's closest ally. So Mike kind of gets the best of all worlds here. No pun intended. So yeah, Haley, ironically, even though Mike is like a huge reason of why she got sent home, is good for Mike. It's great that she's on the jury for him. I just don't have a good sense of like what Haley's perception of the game is or how she thinks about the game. John, you were explaining it. And you could be entirely right. I have no idea. Like
her final tribal council question is to Mama C is like, you played, how has the mother role been a disadvantage to you? Mama C answers, and then Haley leaves.
Yeah, full circle back to Michael Snow, right? Like, it again goes into this idea of this perception of woman in the game of Survivor. And I think that is really telling of who Haley is as a person in Survivor and why I do think she has this, like, social experiment side to her. I think this is, like, her looking at the game from a way of, like, okay, I'm a woman. I want you to represent me, but you can't answer my question in a way that makes me want to vote for you. So I'm voting for the person who, as Daryl Seymour says here, Mike has a social game with the no callers that's a lot better than Mama C's. And we talked about that with like Tyson and Aris earlier today too, right? Like sometimes this first juror is so important just by being like the person who is least sucking in building a relationship with them.
And also they tried to do a girls thing here to vote out Dan. And she says, like, you go misogynistic on the girls are going to take you out. And Haley is liking the girl thing. That was her only confessional of like, yeah, let's do the girls. But that was our only, like, maybe something else could happen that's not Haley.
Yeah. That's, I think we've run out.
Yeah, we have to talk about her again next week. It's fine.
All right, but wait, something we haven't really talked about in these last few seasons, because one, it didn't matter, or two, it didn't have anything. Kelly Remington would have been she was the merge boot, and if she was the first juror, it would have been an even bigger landslide for Mike here. Kelly was so far in with Mike threw a challenge to Kelly, and it would have been just even more of a dominant Mike jury.
Kelly Remington wins this game if she does not get idled out there.
It's true.
Queen?
Yeah, she was in the best position in the game by far. Had the best relationships in the game, but gets idled out and doesn't get to do that. And I agree, McKenna. I think like this is just it doesn't. I don't think Kelly being there changes this vote at all. If anything, maybe it ends up swaying things so that like we don't see that Sierra vote for Carolyn and that Rodney vote for Will. Like I doubt it because those are pretty bitter votes from those two, but maybe Mike just wins more.
I don't think I can take any other B word other than bland for Haley. I don't think she's bitter. Also don't think she's better either.
No, you don't think she's a game changer?
Game changer. Well, you know, that's been our podcast here, everyone. Thank you for grinding through this. We'll be back next week with some more fun people.
And Haley Ford.
And Haley Ford will be back. Haley Ford,
where we will just have this same conversation again. Okay. So we will see you next week. But before we do that, John, there's some things happening.
There are some things happening. In fact, if you turn onto to this very channel in about an hour and a half, you can listen to the second episode of the winner rankings. Should be interesting. There was a lot of discussion about that last batch. A lot of people saying, I don't know how, McKenna, but a lot of people were saying that we had some hot takes in there.
That's great.
There were probably in the bottom 10. I don't know.
It should have been higher.
I mean, yes, but it's okay. Maybe we'll get to defend it once in a while. But anyways, yes, Phil, Will, and Blake will be here discussing that in an hour and a half. So 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. Tomorrow, Phil will be joined once again by Once Upon an Island to talk about the winning games of these seasons we've just discussed here, Karamoan through Worlds Apart. Tegwith is doing her trying to rewatch every once in a while. So make sure you subscribe to the channel and click that bell for notifications so you know when that goes live. And speaking of Game Changer Haley Ford, we're just about moving on to Game Changers with Every Season Matters. So maybe it's a good time to really brush up on her before next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Everyone needs a little bit more Haley Ford in their life. so we encourage you highly to watch both Haley Ford seasons. And then, yeah, so we'll see you guys next Wednesday with another episode of Bitter or Better. Goodbye, everyone.